I think they've changed the okay. philosophy also.
Special new class. So this is a class where, as opposed to other classes, more informational based. This is obviously going to have information, but it's going to hopefully be a little bit more emotionally based. This is our opportunity to get to what we call Pnimius HaTorah, a little deeper. And sometimes it'll sound like a drasha. It'll sound like something you would hear on a Shabbos morning, or a vartlach you'll hear at a Shabbos table, but it's coming from a very different place, and we'll propose it or we will present it in a different way. So the class is called Pshischa on the Parsha, or Parsha from Pshischa, whichever one. The alliteration is what's important. I personally have given a class on Chassidus a few times. I gave a whole series, a 10-part series, 2 hours each. It was gewaldig, just for me to learn about Chassidus. What I realized through that class is that, first of all, I have a lot to learn from Chassidus. I have a lot to grow through Chassidus. But particularly, I found myself very fond of the movement, or I guess I would call it the Chassidic tree of Pshischa. Anyone familiar with Pshischa? Anyone heard that term? No? Pshischa is a place in Poland. And it was a revolution within the Chassidic movement. Just a little bit of background before we get into this, because this is going to be sort of the bedrock of a lot of the characters that we'll meet through this class, come from this history. So obviously the Baal Shem Tov, and Rav Elimelech of Lizhansk, and the Maggid of Mezrich, Rav Elimelech of Lizhansk is probably his most his closest student. And then Rav Elimelech of Lizhansk's closest student was the Choza of Lublin. You might have heard these names, and maybe we'll go through the history a little more at a different point. The Choza of Lublin has a student whose name was the same as his. They had the same Rabbi Yaakov Yitzchak. And his student broke away. He was the top shir in the Choza's yeshiva in Lublin, this year's yeshiva. And this Rabbi Yaakov Yitzchak Rabinovitz, I think, that might have been the Choza's name. I don't remember their last names. I get those mixed up. But their first name is Yaakov Yitzchak. And he's the top shir. He's the Rebbe. And at some point, he realizes that there's something about the Chose's version of Chassidus that he doesn't necessarily connect to, and he breaks away. And he's in Chassidic lore, he's not called Rabbi Yaakov Yitzchak, he's called the Yehudi HaKadosh, the Yid HaKadosh, the Holy Jew. And his name, or his nickname, is really indicative of the movement that he created. It was a movement which was Chassidic, but which wasn't as Rebbe-focused. Nowadays, you find a lot of the Rebbe is sort of like the figurehead of the movement, and you go to the Rebbe for everything, and it's a bracha from the Rebbe, and a kapitel from the Rebbe, whatever it is. The Yid HaKadosh didn't like that. Or he wasn't necessarily, he didn't connect to that. He believed in promoting the concept that every single person has their own stake, that they have to all make it themselves. And we can't use the Rebbe as a crutch in any way. You can have leaders of the movement, you can have rabbis, but they shouldn't be the end-all and be-all of everything. Everyone has to have their own cheshek and their own commitment to Talmud Torah. So that's why he's called the Yid HaKadosh. He's not a rabbi, right? He's not the Choza of Lublin. He's just the Yid HaKadosh. He's just a regular Yid, just a regular Jew. 1800s? Yeah. Thereabouts, yeah. Early 1800s. When he passes away, despite the fact that there were other candidates, the movement gravitates towards a person named Rav Simcha Banim of Pshischa. Rav Simcha Banim of Pshischa is perhaps my favorite Hasidic Rebbe, for many reasons. But when he was being chosen, it was very controversial. He was a businessman. He spoke many languages. He went around in the countryside and he played chess with people. He was a very worldly person. He was also a Talmud Chacham. And he would learn, he was a pharmacist, and he would learn Rambam by the storefront. And that was also something that people didn't necessarily do. I mean, if you were Hasidish, so you learned Baal Shem Tov's Torahs, you learned about Davening, you learned about Gemaras. The Rambam was very analytical, it was very academic. And it wasn't necessarily something that was so popular in other Hasidic sects, to such an extent that Pshischa was put on trial. Perhaps one of the most instrumental weddings of Jewish history was the wedding of Ostiel. We won't get into all the specifics, but basically it was the convergence of many Hasidic sects within the same wedding. Many gedolim of the Hasidic world were coming to the wedding, including what was supposed to be Rav Simcha Banim of Pshischa, and everyone was garnering all of this controversy. we're gonna put the Reb Simcha Banim in front of the Avas Yisrael, right? Reb Yisrael of Apt, the Apt Rev. And whatever, all these stories about Simcha Banim's Talmidim, which we'll get to in a second, in the end, the Avas Yisrael gave the thumbs up to Pshischa, and they stayed within the Hasidic movement. They weren't excommunicated. And what comes out of Pshischa is first of all, the people we're going to be talking about in this class going forward. The movements that come out of Pshischa are perhaps some of the most popular, most populated movements that we know of today. So you might know the lesser known ones also. You have Sakachev, you have Kutsk, you have Radzin, you have Ishbitz, but perhaps the greatest, the magnum opus of Pshischa's Hasidus sects is Ger. Ger comes from Pshischa. The Rav Simcha Banim of Pshischa's main Talmud perhaps is his greatest Talmud Chacham of Talmudim that really did a lot at this wedding to justify their existence is the Chidushei Harim. The Chidushei Harim is the first Ger Rebbe on a very technical level. His name was Rav Yitzchak Meir, Alter. And he has a son who has a son, but the Chidushei Harim's own son passes away relatively early, and the son of that son is orphaned. His name is Yehuda Leib. Ultimately, he gets married and changes his name to Yehuda Arya Leib, but you probably know him best as the Sfas Emes. Yes. The Sfas Emes was an orphan at a young age and grows up in the Chidushei Harim's house. And there were other cousins that also grew up in the house. The Sfas Emes, as everyone knows the Sfas Emes. That comes from Pshischa. So those are some of the people we're going to be dealing with. The Chidushei Harim is one main student. Another main student is the Kutzker Rebbe. You might be familiar with him. Another student is the Me'ash Yiloach, Rebbe Mordechai Yosef Liner, who then becomes the student of, or the colleague of the Kutzker Rebbe. We'll get to all these people in good time. Today I want to just point out two separate ideas, one of which is a famous idea from Simcha Banim, and is echoed. Both of the ideas are on this parsha, or at least brought down on this parsha, and are echoed by not only Reb Simcha Banim, but also the son of the Sfas Emes. They say the same idea in two separate places on the same parsha. And just as an introduction, because it's perhaps one of the most famous famous Torahs of Reb Simcha Banim. And that comes from the concept of becoming pure. So first of all, if you look at the parsha this week, there's a lot of death. I don't know if anyone notices this. The Parah Aduma is trying to get you out of contamination of death. You have other contaminations of death that we're trying to get out of through other means. And then we go into Miriam's death. We go into Aaron's death. There's a lot of death. There's a war at the end. A lot of death in this week's Parsha. But what you also find, in every instance of death, there's some kind of renewal that comes afterwards. The Parah Aduma's whole point is that we're renewing life from being contaminated by death. Right, we have all of these restrictions that we can't do X, Y, or Z because we've come in contact with death. That affiliation with death is prohibiting, it's inhibiting. And then we do this Parah Aduma and it redeems us. It gets us out of that status. Miriam passes away, we lose the water. Moshe Rabbeinu finds a way to get it back. We'll get to it in a second how he does it. Aaron HaKohen passes away, and what happens? He gives it over to Eliezer, right? He gives it over to his son, Eleazar. Eleazar, I don't remember. I think it's Eleazar HaKohen?
Yes.
Eleazar. So every instance of death comes with another instance of renewal. Just a couple of ideas in line with that general construct. First is the famous line, the famous Torah of Simcha Banim of Pshischa, popularized into secular culture during a presidential debate a couple years ago. One of the audience members asks Hillary Clinton, there's this old proverb that says that you should have something in each of your pockets. I don't know if anyone is familiar with this. Mm-hmm. That in one pocket it should say, Anochi afar va'efer. Not what the guy said, but I'm like dust and ashes. And in the other pocket, it's supposed to say, Bishvili nivra ha'olam. That because of me, the world was created. Right? This oscillation between these two polar opposites of our identities. On the one hand, we have to recognize our death. Anochi afar v'efer, I literally came from dust, and I'm literally going back to dust. I'm worthless. I have to recognize that. But on the other hand, you always have to have the other pocket too. You can't get downtrodden, you can't think so poorly of yourself. You also have to think about how God created the world only for you, whatever that means. But what it represents is that you have on the one hand a strength of character, right? B'shvili nivra ha'olam, but also the humility to understand that you have a lot to grow. And these are also the two polar dynamics between Slabodka and Nevardik. So Nevardik Slabodka was Gadlos HaAdam, right? Men are, that we're so great, we have to live up to that level. Whereas Nevardik was more, Rabbi Yossel Horowitz, I think his name was, the altar of Nevardik was very much Shiflos HaAdam, that we're worthless, right? The stories of going into a bakery and asking for nails so that they would scream at you and say how silly you are and how ridiculous you're being in order to recognize your humility, right? It's a crazy muster experience born out of the muster movement, as you might imagine. But this is or Simcha Bana says that in the aftermath of trying to be purified in the Paraduma, because if you see, the Pasuk says, V'lakach Ezov, it says it a couple of times because different ways of doing this. You take an Ezov, which is a hyssop, and you also take an Eitz Eres, which is a cedar tree. Anyone ever seen a cedar tree? I had one in my backyard in Kansas. Not on a farm, but a cedar tree in my backyard prevented me from putting a sukkah on my deck, so I wasn't very fond of it. Besides that, it also sheds its bark and becomes very difficult on the lawn. Besides that, it has huge leaves. Huge leaves, and it grows very, very tall, and it branches out very, very wide. So tons of leaves. I used to leave it for months at a time, and then Ricky would get upset at me, and then I'd either do it or get someone else to do it. But the cedar tree is this huge tree. Rav Simcha Bonham says, that's the Gadlos HaAdam. The huge tree. The hyssop, on the other hand, that you dip inside of the blood, it's a small little bush. That's the Shiflos HaAdam. When we're trying to recreate ourselves after death, after becoming into contamination with a corpse of some kind, the way we do that is finding this balance. We can't be too lowly to say that we're also dead. We also can't be too high to say that we've made it and we don't need anything else. We have to find the balance. The way that we recreate ourselves is finding that balance. Similar idea that's brought down from Rav Mordechai Alter, the Sfasemis' son, the Imre Amis, the great-grandson of the Chiddush Yarim. He says similarly that that you take Efer, I can't find the passage now, but Efer Srefas HaChatas, that you take the Chatas offering, the ashes from it, and then you mix them into El Klicheras El Mayim Chaim.
That's in the first parsha.
Yeah, it's in the beginning. Towards the beginning. Yeah, it's close to that.
Just before Shani.
That you take for this contaminated person the ashes of the chatas offering. V'nasan alav mayim chayim el keli. You put upon them inside of an earthenware vessel. You put upon that mayim chayim, not just water, but living water. So the Imre Amis says the same exact idea on this pasuk too. He says you have first the ashes, but then you have the living water. You're not dead. You have the shiflus, but you also have to be chayim. They say a similar idea by the Baal Tanya, says a similar idea. Not from Pshiska, but I guess we can crossbreed for a second. The Baal Tanya says a similar idea about Har Sinai. You know, they have all this midrash, and they say Har Sinai was picked because it was the lowliest of mountains. Ask the Baal Tanya a very simple idea. Shner Zalman of Liadi, also a big Talmud of the Maggid of Mezrich, also one of the youngest, similar to the Chiddush Yarim, fine, different time. He says the following, I don't understand. If you want to teach me humility, give the Torah in a valley. Well, you choose a mountain. How is a mountain humble? So he says, it's the lowest of the mountains, but it's also a mountain. Because you have to recognize that even in your humility, you also have to recognize Bishvili Nivra HaOlam. So that's one of the most famous ideas of Rav Simcha Bonham Pshischa. You'll find it on his Wikipedia page, even in English, that he's the originator of that proverb, of that audience member. That we all have to have, you know, two notes, one in each pocket. And we oscillate between the two whenever we utilize each of them different times of our lives. When we need a pick-me-up or when we need a bring-me-down. It's also at the core of much of the episodes last couple weeks. We had Korach. Korach thought he was too great. He had to be brought down. Shlach We had the spies who thought they were too little, kachagavim, like grasshoppers. They had to be brought back up. And then after that, we have the parsha of Chukas, which is finding that balance between life and death, between being brought up and being brought down. So that's just an interesting encapsulation of these couple of parshas. But I wanted to mention one other character and one other vart from the parsha, which I think is very important. And that is the Shem Yishmuel. Has anyone ever heard of the Shem Yishmuel? Shem Yishmuel, his name was Rav Shmuel Borenstein. His father was the Avne Nezer, Rav Avram Borenstein, I think. And his father-in-law was the Kutzker Rebbe. Very interesting. I don't know what it would be like to have a Kutzker Rebbe as a father-in-law. We'll talk about the Kutzker Rebbe in Hamei V'Nevin. But so the Shem Yishmuel quotes from his father, the Avne Nezer, who was a huge Talmud Chacham. The Shilas and Tshuvas that we have from Avne Nezer, very in-depth, very reliable, you know, we depend on them. He asked a very interesting question, which is considered in other Mefarshim as well. When it comes to Moshe hitting the rock, so the pasuk says, right? Kacha samata vidibartem el hasela. How do you translate the word hasela? The stone. Right? Why doesn't it say dibartem el sela? Dibartem el evan. Why does it say dibartem el hasela? What's the rock?
It was the same stone.
Good. It was the same stone. Says the Shem Yishmuel. Part of the problem, or part of the lesson, I should say, of Moshe hitting the rock was not necessarily that he didn't listen to Hashem, but it was also the fact that he didn't recognize what he had accomplished with this rock already. Hashem says, Dibartim el hasela, go back to that same exact rock. And Moshe says, okay, same rock, same situation, same action. I'm going to hit it, it's going to bring out water. Hashem's point was, Shem Yishmuel explains, that the second time around you shouldn't need to hit it anymore. The second time around it should be easier. Once you've already ingrained a midah inside of a person, you should be able to revisit that midah. You shouldn't assume that it's still just as difficult as the first time. Says the Shem Yishmuel that in life, oftentimes we come to a situation, we come to a mentality where we think to ourselves, oh, I used to be able to do that. I used to be able to daven a good Shmoneh Esrei. I used to be able to learn a Black Gemara. I'm too busy now. I haven't done it in such a long time. Based on the Shem Yishmuel, we can say it's not true. Doesn't matter. It could be 40 years. You don't have to approach it the same way. You should feel confident in the fact that you can do it again. It's not just on Yom Kippur that you feel a connection to Kadosh Baruch Hu. Later in the year, in Tammuz, you're sitting there and you're thinking, oh, where's my davening gone? Where is it? I've lost the fervor that I had that Yom Kippur at Ne'ilah. It's not true. You can get back there if you just want to do it. We shouldn't discourage ourselves and think, oh, the work that I put in to get to there on Yom Kippur and Ne'ilah, I'm going to have to do all again. No. Just try, and you'll find it like riding a bike. You'll go right back to that moment. You'll go right back to that attitude. You'll go right back to that persona of yourself that you can do it again. You don't have to hit the rock again. And that was the message Moshe Rabbeinu was supposed to teach that he couldn't teach. The Shem Yishmuel says it was going back to the same rock, but it was supposed to be a different situation. Sure. It was supposed to be the same rock who understood and could actually just slip right back in to what he was doing before. He didn't need to be hit again. He didn't need to be pushed into it. We have to revisit our former selves sometimes. For me, it takes a little bit of a different turn. But sometimes I'm looking at my sfarim on my shelf, right? And there are certain sfarim I get to, certain sfarim I don't get to as much. And Ricky is upset about some of that. But, whenever it hurts my case when I want to buy a new sefer. Because then she says, well, you're going to learn a little bit, and then you're going to... I tell her, they're all reference sfarim. I can't learn them straight through. They're for drushas. I go back to them, whatever. I'll leave that to me and Ricky. But sometimes I look at my sfarim and I say, wow, when did I get that sefer? Why did I get that sefer? And then I remember, oh, I was a bachar at Yeshiva University, and it was something I really enjoyed. And I say, oh, I don't know if I can learn it again. It's not, not for me anymore. And I think to myself the same thing. No, dibartim el hasela. Just try it. Try it out again. You'll see that the water will just flow. It'll just flow like it did before. You shouldn't ever think that, oh, that was yesteryear. That was my former self when I had to hit the rock to get the water out. It's not like that anymore. You can revisit your old persona, you can revisit your old attitudes, and even if you think that maybe it was such a long time ago, or maybe it was so difficult the first time, the Shem Yisrael is teaching us, that what Moshe was trying or is supposed to teach us was exactly this idea. That maybe you had to hit the rock once upon a time, but now, just go speak to it, and it'll flow right out. Those are two ideas that come from Shischa, that comes through Katz into the Sagat Shavar, and that comes through the Chiddush She'arim from Rav Simcha Banim and his great-great-grandson, the Imre Emes. Shkayach. Until next week. Every Thursday night. Spread the word. More Chassidus on the Parsha.
Okay.